Our special guest today, first part of a three-part series with the string wizard, John McEwen. John has a brand new album out entitled Made in Brooklyn. Actually, he's not out till the end of September. September 30th, I think, is the release date. Got a hold of John because I noticed that the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, a band of which John is a founding member, is touring a lot this year. Turns out it's their 50th anniversary. As I contacted John to talk about that, and he said, you're not going to believe what else I've got going on. A brand new album, the best album, solo album I've ever made, Made in Brooklyn. You're going to hear from John at the top of the hour. Three-part series. Really enjoy John. Plays everything, plays it well, has great historical perspective of what he's doing, and all of the stuff that he's put on record and performed, all that he's done. John's an amazing guy. I'm so happy to be able to bring you John McEwen, first part of a three-parter. I'm very happy to welcome back to Unreal Bluegrass a real favorite of mine for many reasons, John McEwen. How are you, John?
That's a good day, Steve.
It's always a good day, isn't it? I mean, the sun's shining where I'm at, and I'm talking to John McEwen not only about the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, which started this, but also this great new album, Made in Brooklyn, that comes out, I think, the end of September. Is that right?
Right. It looks like we're going to be getting some airplay before then, and a lot of people are interested in it. It's exciting. It's the most exciting solo album I've put out.
Well, as you said, and I will tell the listeners how this happened, I noticed that the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, of which John is a founding member, still a member, seem to be touring a lot, at least in my world. I'm going to see you twice this year, John, two different venues.
Wow.
And one is in Raleigh. I think you're going to be at IBMA week, and then I'm going to see you at a venue in Ohio. And I thought, well, I should probably talk to John. And as I contacted John, saying, hey, let's talk, you said, hey, I got this great new album coming out. And sure enough, there it is, Made in Brooklyn. And I've listened to it extensively, and I'm very happy that we happen to coincide on two things. Number one, is it an anniversary of the Dirt Band? Is that what I see a renewed touring schedule with them, first of all?
Well, we're touring, and it's the 50th year, so we may as well say it is.
Yeah.
This is the 50th year of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, which is quite an astounding thing.
It really is.
August of 1966, we actually got underway, and end of July, maybe. It's been a weird, unusual, fun, difficult, easy, all these things at once. I can't believe how bad this gig is. I can't believe how good this one is. All through those 50 years, everything has been said.
And John, isn't it interesting? And even, and we'll tie this into the Made in Brooklyn album, which comes out soon, which, by the way, is fabulous. It has a lot of great guests, and we're going to talk about
the tunes.
Yeah, you're welcome. But really, the music of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, I don't know that were you to start today. I'm not sure what you would be classified. I don't like labels on music, but the indicative of the music that you play and enjoy as through the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band is this Made in Brooklyn album, which has, you have so many different kinds of music on here. There's really gorgeous instrumental stuff.
I was going to compare it to something the Dirt Band has done, when I had more input into how an album's direction was going, was the Uncle Charlie and His Dog Teddy album.
Okay.
On that album, I put Clinch Mountain Backstrap, a Ralph Stanley song, and Randy Lynn Rag, the Earl Scruggs ripping banjo solo,
with tuners,
and the
yeah.
classical banjo piece all by itself.
Yeah.
Along with Jeff's songs and Kenny Loggins' songs, and Jeff sang a song with just acoustic guitar, Living Without You. There was some weird, in other words, it was a collection
exactly
of Americana.
Right, exactly.
And the Americana instruments. That wasn't called that at the time.
That's right.
But so you didn't hear five of the same thing in a row. And there, you might have a favorite or a least favorite, but you put up with it because coming up next is that other one that goes into that weird space.
Yeah.
Or a different space. And so putting it together, Made in Brooklyn, I wanted to assemble people that I've wanted to record with all these road travel years that I've crossed paths with them, and a certain bunch of songs that I felt like had been overlooked. And voila, we did it.
Yeah, you did. There are very, I'll use the term, I want to talk about the recording method here, because that also harkens back to me, not the same a way of recording, but the approach to the Circle album. Will the Circle be on vinyl? I want to talk about the method of the recording, but as to the tunes, there are tunes on here that are really just, I'll say, just lush instrumental things. I think the very first one on the album, Brooklyn Crossing, kind of fits in that with a guitar, and there's some nice fiddle violin stuff behind it. It's just beautiful instrumental music, which, you know, you being the string wizard, kind of fits in that category. Then there's bluesy tunes. There are clearly tunes influenced by, I hear clarinet and flute, and I get a feel for New Orleans. You've kind of traveled around the globe on this thing. There's even a tune in here that I would say with one more notch over could be from Carmen. I mean, there's the Julie's theme, Jules' theme, which there's a kind of thing in there that reminds me of. You've really covered every kind of music, I think, John, that you've embodied your entire career, and it's so nicely done. It's all there's
well, thank you.
Yeah, there's.
Yeah, I try to cover. It's as if you're sitting in the living room,
yeah.
And it's mine, and I've had some friends over, and I show you what they can do. I don't think I call this a solo album, but this is everybody's album. I mean, you want me to prove that? Let me see sing She Darks the Sun instead of John
instead
Cowan.
Instead of John Cowan, right.
Yeah, and when John Cowan sings, She Darks the Sun is a song that Bernie Ledden wrote years ago. I think it was before the Eagles, but that's, I met Bernie before he started the Eagles. In 68 I met him and has been a friend since. And he wrote this song that is just a perfect hippie metaphor kind of, I mean, I don't even know what it means. With the length of her mind, she darked the sun. I kind of know what it means. It means when she walked in the room, she took over all the airspace or something.
Yeah.
But somehow I relate to this song and have all my life. And John Cowan is one of the only people that can sing it. And this album is everybody's in the sense that the Circle Be Unbroken album. Everybody can call it their album.
Well,
Jimmy Martin definitely did.
Yeah.
Have you heard my Circle Be Unbroken album?
That's right. I've heard him do that too. You're right.
But that's okay. It's a gathering of Americana music styles. And before, like the Dirt Bands, Uncle Charlie, it wasn't called Americana then. It was called hippie country rock bluegrass.
Nobody, John, nobody knew what you guys were. It was just good music.
Yeah,
you
it
know?
Was a combination of what had gone before. And my, you know, I had music. The two forms of music I loved were bluegrass and traditional Delta blues.
Yeah.
And like Lightning Hopkins and Memphis Slim and the different people that had names like Blind Something or Lemon Somebody.
Yeah,
you know?
Blind Lemon Pledge was the old Cheech and
Chong.
Blind
Lemon, yeah. One of my favorites. And at the same time, the first record I bought was Lightning Strikes Again by Lou Christie, a 45.
I have that. I have that 45. Now, oh, geez. All right.
That's a great record.
Isn't that great?
Here I am playing bluegrass, and the Beatles are on the radio along with the Birds and stuff, and that song comes out. And I got to meet Lou Christie and find out that he recorded that all in one take.
Wow.
And he played the guitar on it. And it's an incredible record. There's like three movements in it.
It is.
I've always liked music that had sections that changed. It wasn't the same thing at the beginning as it was in the middle. And at the end, something was a little different. But there was a thread that would run through it.
Yeah. And I think, John, the thread that runs through this, and we can tell, I mean, there is a blues. You talk about blues. I listen to Traveling Mood as, I mean, there's your blues song right there on this on Made in Brooklyn.
Oh, David Bromberg got to play some. That's what was so fun about this. I look at David and I go, back me up on this. And I'm totally confident that he's going to play things I wish I could play.
That
and just it's one take, one pass. It's so, like the Circle album.
Well, okay, good.
They're all gathered around. Well, in this case, one microphone.
Let's since you've mentioned that, let's talk about the method of recording, and we've hinted at some of the guests that you have and the breadth of the music that you like and that you put on Made in Brooklyn. But let's talk a little bit about, and I'm talking to John McEwen if you're just tuning in, let's talk a little bit about the recording process, because I think that's key to the feel that the listeners get from this.
Well, when the Circle album was done, it was a very conscious effort to try and make a recording that was going to be high quality, whether you liked the music or not, or you'll say whether you knew about that type of music or not. It would be noticeably pristine sounding. So my brother set up all the mics, and we recorded everything to two tracks. And that was the master. Once the song was finished, that was the tape that you took to the mastering lab to have the discs made from. We didn't record it to 16 or 24 track and then mix down to a 2-track. So there was a whole generation of tape reproduction that wasn't lost.
Right.
Well, fast forward to now, when you can record it high definition. Most records are recorded nowadays at 48 hertz and 20 bit or 24 bit. Well, this was recorded at 192, 24 bit. And if there was a gnat breathing in the room, you'd hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Is the point. And it was recorded with one microphone. It was called a binaural microphone. It records a stereo picture. So we had to gather around this microphone, not in front of it, but all around it. The microphone is placed in a dummy head named Lars, L-A-R-S. And we would run through a song, and the engineer, David Chesky, would come out and say, background singers need to back up about 2 feet, and the flute's a little bit loud, and bring the guitar in about a foot closer, and maybe move over to that side.
No kidding.
You know, because that one microphone was recording the sound that was hitting it from surrounding it. And when the balance was right and we recorded the song, you were done. Couldn't wear headphones because the headphones, they'd pick up that noise. Couldn't overdub to go in and fix things. And it makes people play different. There's a couple musical mistakes on here, but there's only a couple, and you may not even notice them.
Well,
it's more like a feel-good mistake.
Exactly.
I don't know if I should have said musical mistake.
No. I know what you mean.
Pardon?
I know what you mean. You're describing, but I think it does lend itself to the, yeah.
On Earl Scruggs albums.
Oh, sure.
Like, I can point them out to you.
Sure.
But they came off better than what he intended. On Rolling in My Sweet Baby's Arms, he goes a half step flat on a high roll-up, but then he immediately corrects it. And I ask, I meant to get that right on there, but I didn't, so I moved up to it.
John, we've all heard Earl's breakdown the first time through, and he has to step aside because he's doing that by hand.
Yeah, that time when he turned that V string a little flat, you could hear him stretching it up into tune.
Yeah. So that's good
stuff.
First
Earl's breakdown. That was recorded. Lester Flatt doesn't play the 2-chord the first time through. He forgot it.
I've heard this. I've heard this story. You're right. These are folks, if you're listening, these are just like little banjo things that if you play through these things, and I do it at a pedestrian level, and John does at the level that the String Wizard does. But we know these stories because we've heard them and actually listened to the record. So that's amazing. Yeah, I like the fact that what you're telling me is essentially it's a live recording. You're doing it interfacing, not through some internet, but you're doing it face-to-face in a circle, and the musicians are there.
Yeah, and the story is, when you're sitting out there playing in this format, if you can't hear the guy that's playing lead, well, neither will the microphone.
Okay.
So quiet down. You know, so play so you can, you have to listen to other people. Gee, what a concept. And what that does is it gets more energy out of people's playing and singing because they know they're not going to go in and fix this.
That's right.
And in the early days of recording, like on the Uncle Charlie album, there were 3 songs that I did on first take, and I liked it from Opus 36, the classical piece, was one take, Clinch Mountain Backstep, and Traveling Mode, which is... Here I am on this, on Made in Brooklyn. I like to pay homage to the Dirt Band by recording my version of Traveling.
Right, yes, third cut on the album.
And I had to make sure it was one take. Because supposedly you're supposed to get better, not worse, right?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what better is. If everybody's playing it, it's different. You know, just play it different every time. It's a jazz, is what the old story used to be.
Yeah, you know, mm-hmm. what was fun about this, and I was talking to Andy Gessling just yesterday about, he goes, you know, this session went so fast, I had to look at my notes to see what I played on that song, because he wasn't sure he played dobro or mandolin. And Andy can play anything. Andy's from the band Railroad Earth.
Oh, sure.
And he plays banjo, mandolin, guitar, dobro, alto sax, clarinet, and zither.
You don't hear many calls for zithers in the studio.
Well, I put him, we did a song called Favorite Dream that Del Bryant, the son of Felix and Budlow Bryant, and for those that are listening, Felix and Budlow wrote songs like Dream, the Everly Brothers song, Rocky Top, mm-hmm. Love Hurts. They were the Lennon and McCartney of kind of the countryside of pop Americana music.
You're right.
Well, Del, the son, calls me when I'm putting this together. He goes, John, would you like to hear some of my dad's demos that nobody's heard? I said, this is like getting a call from one of John Lennon's relatives saying, I got this tape my grandfather gave me, and nobody's heard it. But, yes, and so we found My Favorite Dream out of the 20 songs we went through. And this is like being in an old movie. This song could have been put in Casablanca.
Exactly, and it's one of the what I call very gorgeous. And actually, I was listening to it, and I was thinking about it being maybe in a movie. It's a very plush instrumental approach. I really like it.
And the background vocals are they sound like movie background.
Yeah.
Vocals.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And the zither, I told Andy, I said, I'd like to have you play this through on the zither one complete time, and then we'll start the song. And, oh, my gosh, this guy, one pass. Yeah, I can't even play a scale on that thing without messing up. Playing a zither is like a bad deal.
Too many strings.
You know, you lay it in your lap, and it just seems impossible.
Randy
Gessling goes after everything.
That's part one of our visit with John McEwen. Absolutely love John McEwen, all the history that he brings to music and his approach. We're talking about his brand-new album, yet to be released. Won't be out until the end of September, Made in Brooklyn. So many guests on it, and we talk about all of them in detail. As this series progresses, there will be two more parts of my conversation with John McEwen, the string wizard himself, on his brand-new album, Made in Brooklyn.